Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Incidentally, you've been texting in throughout the show, as you often do. We also hope you call once in a while. We like the sound of your voice, 312-981-7200, about just keeping stuff. Boomers are doing this and their kids don't want it. John, I save nothing. My husband saves everything. My kids want none of it. And about the business of showering, we gave you tips on that, and you're mostly doing it wrong if you're scrubbing real hard with hot water every day. John, I agree. We need to normalize less showering. Why shower if you aren't working out? John, do you really want people, says another listener, making your food or serving it to you to hear this and shower less often? I've been served food by smelly people before. Doesn't bother me a lick. Anyway, 847 said, hey, John, I've got short hair and I wash it once or twice a week and it drives my wife nuts. I'm not sure if it's because you are doing it more often than she thinks or less often. Let's ask Dr. Copen how often we should shower and shave and wash our hair. He is a chief medical officer, so this is technically below his pay grade at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. Welcome back, Dr. Copen.
Thank you very much, John. And there are certain subjects I am wise enough to refrain from commenting. Yeah. I will definitely leave this to the marital couple to decide what's appropriate.
I think that's a really good answer. So instead of saying consult your physician, it would be consult the person you share a bed with.
Exactly, who you spend most of your waking hours with, right? This isn't the medical issue. This really is about keeping our spouses, significant others happy.
I don't want to bend this too hard, but the article did remind us that the largest organ is your skin, and it's not just a place to put lotion on. It's a vital part of your well-being. Eh, Doc?
Totally agree. Take good care of your skin. Keep it clean. It is a highly cultural thing, though, what clean skin means and how frequently people should bathe. We have our American way, which I think is pretty common. That's not true necessarily in other places in the world. John, you're a man who likes to travel. I'm sure you've noticed that.
I have. I've been in elevators with those people. And I wonder, how do they not notice? Like, don't they think, gee, this isn't good? But now I seem to be, culturally biased, but I think we all have the same noses and the same olfactory sensors. But
it's
for some
interesting,
reason,
though,
it's
again,
not
though,
a deal.
Culturally, we have certain expectations with our culture. There are other places in the world where it's just different. People not only tolerate, but certain scents that are coming from someone else is not only acceptable, it's expected. So it's just different.
My wife and I have been talking lately about how when we go from different environments, air-conditioned building, to this continually warm fall, or in and out of a car, in and out of a bus, how you get a sniffle or kind of a congestion. And you've talked about that before. I don't know if we're the only ones noticing it or if whatever that is more rampant this year, but it seems like that's not uncommon. Would you just reiterate your thoughts about that, Doc?
Yeah, so Jen, it's interesting. So the air quality, and I'm not necessarily talking about pollution, but that could be part of it, varies depending where we are. So for example, some buildings may have a very different type of air quality than when you go outside. So it might be that the mold count is higher within a certain building that you are, and an individual might have an allergy or just it's not a great tolerance to that high mold count inside a building, and they might feel congested. And then they go outside, and they feel better. Alternatively, let's say it's warm and humid outside. You go from an air-conditioned building outside, and suddenly you're breathing this very humid, warm air. People can feel different because of that. So there's allergies, there's the amount of humidity that's in the air, there's also particulate matter, things that we can't see. that we inhale, and our bodies have mechanisms to cleanse that, purify the air, but that can leave people feeling congested as well. It really is interesting, isn't it?
Well, it's not uncommon. You know what I'm also hearing is more common this year is walking pneumonia, and among young people. I'm not even sure what walking pneumonia is, but what are you hearing about that?
Yeah, so first of all, walking pneumonia is an inflammatory process in the lungs. It could be infectious, that where a person is not that sick. So we call it walking pneumonia because the person can walk around with pneumonia. Jen, I think typically when we think about somebody having pneumonia, we think about somebody being in bed really ill, right? So walking pneumonia is not as severe a type of pneumonia where people walk around. Oftentimes they can do their normal activities. And what you're referencing is one of these post-COVID very interesting situations where the COVID virus outcompeted other viruses and bacteria for pride of infecting us. So think about how we talked about we didn't see a lot of influenza, seasonal flu, John, in 2000, 2001, even in 2002. And there were other viruses viral illnesses that we weren't seeing a lot of because of the amount of COVID that was around. This is an interesting thing that can happen is these respiratory bugs compete with one another. Well, there's another one out there. It's actually a bacteria called Mycoplasma. And Mycoplasma can cause upper respiratory infections, including pneumonia. And it's a common cause of what we would call walking pneumonia. And a group of people that are at risk of getting this are kids. And what we saw through the late summer, particularly August into September, was a lot more of this mycoplasma stuff causing ER visits, particularly among kids. And I think what we're seeing is we're getting back to a more normal situation with mycoplasma after the last 3 to 4 years of COVID. So just a really interesting manifestation of how these bugs literally compete with one another.
What's the latest on COVID and our vaccinations? Where are we? What are you hearing?
So the first thing is the amount of COVID that we have in the community is down. And I bet if we could poll our listeners, John, people would say in their own experience they're seeing less as opposed to what we saw during the summer, right, where it seemed like everybody was getting it.
Yep.
So in the data actually prove that. We're seeing a lot less in the ER. Test positivity rates are down. And my personal favorite, the old wastewater analysis that they do that we've spoken so much about, that's showing a real decline in the amount of virus in the wastewater, including in northeastern Illinois. So all that's really fascinating. Now, having said that, we're just having this magnificent October. I mean, the weather is extraordinary, but we should expect that once we get towards Thanksgiving and Christmas, we're going to see an increase again in the amount of COVID that's out there. I mean, it's guaranteed that that's going to happen. So if you haven't gotten your COVID vaccine yet, this is a great time to get it before we get into the real fall weather. And before we get into the period around the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, where so many of us are going to be indoors with lots of other people.
That's so funny because the first couple of years of the pandemic, we would cancel Christmas or Thanksgiving for the fear that we would get or give COVID to somebody. And I don't sense that alarm at all now. And maybe I'm guessing we don't need to be that alarmed about it. But my question is, if I am getting or giving COVID now, is the strain I'm getting or giving better, worse, or would you say the same in its harm to other people, doctor?
Yeah, what's different now, John, is us. because we've all developed immunity either through natural infection or from vaccination. So when we do get infected with COVID, our bodies now are prepared to deal with the infection. Back in the year, back in 2020, 2021, even into 2022, the first part of the year, that was very different. People were only then developing the immunity to the virus. So although COVID still can be a serious challenge for some people, particularly older folks and people with chronic illness, the fact that we now have so much immunity in the population means that the experience that we're going to have with COVID is very different than what it was during the first couple of years of the pandemic.
Doc, I got just a few seconds here, but I wondered what you thought about this Nature aging study about dementia. Can you just give me the headline on this?
We have known for a long time that severe infection of various kinds can actually lead to dementia later in life. What a group did, and it's pretty amazing science, John. They were able to use stored blood samples on patients who've had severe infection, compare it to people who have not had severe infection, and they're able to identify certain proteins that were present in the blood of the people who had the severe infection at a higher rate than people who did not have severe infection. And there's some thought that these proteins might actually be a risk for later development of dementia. If so, this group, I think they've helped push forward the scientific, possible scientific understanding of at least some of the causes to certain types of dementia. And this is not, John, in no way is this like the absolute cause of how people get dementia, because dementia is a very complicated thing. There's different kinds of dementia, different causes. But what this group, I think, has done is really push forward the research on how certain severe infections later can cause dementia in certain people.
I guess if we're ever going to get to prevention or cure or slowing it, we need to understand it. And at least this does that, huh?
Exactly. That's very well said, John. That there are certain proteins that our bodies make in response to severe infection. It makes sense to me. It's at least some of those proteins are going to have other impacts on the body, and included in that could be the development of some types of dementia. So this is an important study. It doesn't give us the answer to anything, but this is the way science works. It's stepwise. This group used some pretty amazing technology to do this work, and I think this will be one of many studies of this type that we're going to see. And one final thought on this, John. We know that some of the proteins elaborated by the body in a severe COVID infection is what leads to what we know to be long COVID. And included in long COVID is that brain fog we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And now that we're getting further away, there are people who are seeing some diminishment in their overall cognitive ability due to a severe COVID infection.
Boy, if that does not encourage you to get a vaccine.
That's the point. This is just another reason to get the vaccine, because the vaccine, even though it's not necessarily going to keep you from getting infected, it will keep you from getting severely infected. So another potential good reason to be vaccinated to decrease the possibility of later dementia from a severe COVID infection.
Dr. Jeffrey Copen from Northwestern. I'll talk to you next Tuesday, doctor.
Looking forward to it, John. Everybody stay well. Bye-bye.